This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Well, here we go back to the abnormalcy of normalcy. It was a great escape leading up to yesterday and yesterday. The wonderful solar power, the eclipse that put on a show for all of us, and seemingly most everyone was involved in it. And I think one of the reasons we embraced it is it took us away from politics, the presidential race, Ukraine, Hamas, Israel, and, even the Crumblies, which are back front and center in the news as they're about to be sentenced, and we'll talk about that too. But wasn't it wonderful to be away from all of that? For some of us, obviously the families involved, never going to get away from it, but for the rest of us, it was just great to embrace an event that didn't have any right or wrong, or I'm on this side and you're on the other side, no fight at all. It was a natural phenomenon, didn't hurt anybody, confused the animals, and maybe confused some of us.
Might have hurt you if you didn't put your glasses on.
It did hurt you if you looked up. If you did exactly what we told you not to do, unfortunately, you're going to have some problems. And they last a long time. They said that people who did this last eclipse were still suffering from eye problems. So, gee whiz, we said it 100 times. Don't look at it without those glasses. Those glasses were something, too. I mean, they blacked out everything. But go ahead.
No, I said I did have to look at the sun for a second because I kept losing it behind the building, and I didn't know if that's because the eclipse was in full effect or because I couldn't find the sun anymore.
Well, you know what was funny that you mentioned that? I kept thinking it was moving.
Right.
And I don't know what it was, but I kept leaning forward and where is it going? Is it moving across the sky? Can't be moving across the sky. No one's talking about that, but that's the way it looked to me, and I understand what you're saying. A couple times you lose it and you go, what the heck?
Technically, we're moving. Everything is moving, so it was technically moving.
Well, you're right about that. It's always moving.
Scientist.
I still don't understand why we don't have to strap ourselves to trees so we don't fall off the earth.
Right, or get nauseous.
Yeah. Boy. But anyway, it was a big deal. It was a lot of fun. Some people, some of the news people reporting it, they were like freaking out. Some that were in Toledo and the fish are walking across the water. Now, I don't think the fish were walking across the water. And frankly, no one said that. But they were that excited about all of the things that were changing. I'm just saying we were all open to a wonderful
communal experience
that didn't pit anybody against anybody.
Here,
you didn't choose sides. You didn't pick winners and losers. We were all in this together, and unfortunately, right away, we get back to where we were.
Here at the Fisher Building, it kind of reminded me of, remember back when you were in school and it started snowing for the first time and everybody ran to the window and looked outside? That's kind of what it felt like here.
Interesting. Interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way.
A lot of wonderment.
There is a lot of wonderment and natural phenomena. And today, I'm looking at my Detroit News. They've got a big section with pictures, just as we suggested they would. So I hope people didn't miss it by trying to take a good picture of it, because there are plenty of good pictures. And to be able to be in the moment and experience this as it was happening was the right thing to do. I found it most enjoyable. I sat out in the backyard and planted myself and just kept an eye on it, and with the little kind of thumbnail coming over the sun slowly but surely. Looked like a French manicure at one point.
It did. It looked like somebody didn't clean up their toenail clippings.
Well, that's gross. Don't wait. Let's just stick with it looked like a French manicure. Not someone didn't clean up their toenail clippings.
Much more eloquent than I.
Well, it's like being on an airplane when someone decides to take their socks off and trim their toes.
I found myself being more excited for it than I thought I was going to be. Leading up to it, I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be kind of cool. But as it was happening, I found it more exciting than I thought I actually would.
Yeah, if you let yourself, you got swept up in it and with the excitement that people were having. And there were a lot of people who were very excited about what they were experiencing. And in their world and their minds, it will be something they'll carry with them the rest of their lives. But there aren't a lot of things that happen like that that are good and positive. We remember lots of bad things for the rest of our lives that have happened in our history. We don't always have a lot of good, positive things that we can carry with us and say, what a great experience. Wasn't that fabulous? Yes, it was. And yes, it got darker. We didn't have 100%, I understand. It was still fabulous. And what an experience. And I'm so glad that everyone who wanted to had a chance to experience it.
And the weather cooperated. That was a kind of some suspense throughout the day.
That was a very important cooperation. Because no matter what, if the weather isn't right and if there are clouds, it's going to cause trouble no matter where you went. I'm wondering what it was like for people who went to Luna Pier even after the mayor said not to, and for people who went to Toledo and wherever they went, if they feel it was well worth it to go somewhere rather than just stay in their own, at the outside the office, outside your company, outside your house. And I did not hear of a major traffic problem that I thought could be a possibility. Have you guys, Mike, Danielle, Rich, anybody hear about any major problems with people coming back, or was everyone in a festive mood and everything was okay?
I heard getting out of Luna Pier was a little tougher than getting into Luna Pier.
Which is what the mayor said. It was going to be a problem. And people still went, and maybe they were very happy they went. I don't know. Luna Pier is a wonderful little town. But they were not ready for this. They could not be because of construction and the bridge and all of that.
Maximum delay I heard was about an hour.
About an hour extra traffic? Somebody just said in my headphones that James Crumbly is speaking. Do we want to hear a little bit of that?
Yeah, I say let's listen in.
All right.
My heart is really broken for everybody involved. I understand my words are not going to bring any comfort. I understand that they're not going to relieve any pain. And quite frankly, they probably just don't believe me. However, I really want the families of Madison Baldwin, Hannah St. Juliana, Tate Meyer, Mir, and Justin Schilling to know how truly sorry I am and how devastated I was when I heard what happened to them. I have cried for you and the loss of your children more times than I can count. I know your pain and loss will never go away. Part of you will be missing forever. But please know that I am truly very sorry. I am sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did. I cannot express how much I wish that I had known what was going on with him or what was going to happen. Because I absolutely would have done a lot of things differently. Again, my heart pours out to every single one of you. It really does. Jiz Matthews, I'm not gonna overdo a lot of things that were already said. But I know the full amount of pressure that you have on you and the responsibility that has been placed on you throughout this case. I have the utmost respect for you, and I'm simply going to ask that you sentence me in a fair and just way. You presided over my trial and heard the evidence that was presented against me. You know that what my son did, I was not aware of, or that he was planning it, or that he obtained access to the firearms in my house. There was absolutely no evidence that suggested that. As my attorney has told you, I've been on lockdown for 23 hours a day. I've not been able to speak to my son since November 30th. And I've not been able to speak with my wife since December 3rd. I know that I have experienced pales in compassion to what those families have lost, their children, and countless other victims experience every day because of what my son did. But I want you to know I too grieve for everyone, as I have explained. For everyone that's been affected by what my son pled guilty to doing. And I'll continue to feel this pain for the rest of my life as well. If I could go back and change things, if I could go back and do things differently, and maybe none of us would be here today. So again, I ask your honor to impose a just and fair sentence based on the truth about what you heard during my trial. I'm asking the court to sentence me to time served and place me on probation for the maximum time allowed with the GPS tether for as long as the court deems necessary. I also want to address one last thing. And that's to what Tate Beer's dad said. It is time that we all know the truth. We have been prohibited from telling the whole truth. The whole truth has not been told. And I'm with you, Mr. Mayor. I too want the truth. Because you have not had it. You have not had the truth at all. The truth has not been presented to you.
Well, there you have it. And we've heard from earlier with WJR All Talk, Tom Jordan, Kevin Dietz. We heard from Jennifer Crumbly, now James Crumbly, mom and dad of Ethan, in front of the judge, Maying, they're really basically pleading for some sort of leniency in whatever they come up with. They don't want to go to prison for 15 years, obviously. No one does. They've been in prison for 27 months at this point. It'll be fascinating to see what the judge decides. It will be just one step in the healing of the parents of Tate Meyer, Hannah St. Juliana, Madison Baldwin, and Justin Schilling. And they're right. There's more information to be found, and it's going to have to come from the school and others involved in this tragedy. So we're far from over at this point. As we continue in focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR. Well, that has happened for years, and we never take it for granted. Thank you for making us number one in the great state of Michigan once again. We work hard for that, and we always will. All right, a guy who's been working hard and busy, busy, busy with more to do, Todd Flood, the attorney, managing partner at Flood Law, who's staying right on top of the James and Jennifer Crumbly sentencing right now. We heard from both of them over the last couple of hours, and we want to hear from you, Todd. Is it all going pretty much as you would have guessed?
Yes, actually it is. It's just one really, really sad day. So I I think, candidly, what an emotional, heartfelt impact the victims had on the judge. If you walked out of there with a dry eye, I don't know how that's possible. It was shaking. The guidelines scored, I think the judge went along with how they were scored by probation and the pre-sentence investigation report and the guidelines that the government put forth. So now it's going to be a question of whether or not the judge sentences the Crumbleys to beyond the guidelines to a 10-year sentence as opposed to anywhere between 43 and 86 months to 15 years. So the bottom end could be 83 months and obviously the top end 15, meaning they would have their first visit to parole after they serve the 53 months. If the judge goes over the guidelines, she could sentence them to 10 years, two-thirds of the 15, so 10 to 15.
All right. Do you expect them to be sentenced equally, or will what has come out from what we've heard James Crumbley doing while he was in jail, calling the prosecutor a bunch of names and blaming a lot of people, some say blaming everyone but himself, is that going to weigh heavily on what the judge finds in terms of his time that he'll spend in jail?
So I would have said yes. He would be the one that would potentially have more time, but he's the only one that got up and apologized. He's the only one that, you know, of the two that I saw anyway, unless something's changed in the interim, and apologized to the families and showed remorse. That's, I think, is a big step for a court to hear. And what impact that has on the court may basically nullify those threats. So, you know, I think they will be very close in time, if not the same. Jennifer Crumbley, obviously you heard it. She's the one that wouldn't have changed anything. One, two, she was the last one with that gun with the shooter. She's the one that was derelict in it. So those things really play out to me as being irresponsible. But we'll see. I think, candidly, it's going to be probably the same as far as sentencing goes.
Interesting last bit of his mea culpa speech that James Crumbley brought up the parents, Tate Myers' father and others, saying that they need to be told the truth, and the truth has not been revealed yet. All of the story of what took place, what should have happened, what didn't happen, who's to blame, all of that. He brought that up at the end, saying that they deserve to have that information. Did he do that to try to get, I don't know, somebody on his side, or what was he doing?
So there's this looming question with the everybody in the case of the responsibility of the school and what happened at that school and how, you know, the counselor received all these messages but didn't share those messages with the parents prior to that fatal day. So, you kind of can sum it up like this. You know, when you ask the counselor, can you imagine the cross-examination? You went to school, you got your master's, oh, I see, you got your PhD, oh, I see. The next thing, you see Mr. Crumbley over here, he's a Uber driver. His education is not that of yours. He's got a GED. And you didn't do anything except for overtly bury things. The truth that's what he may be speaking of. And I think that's something that he was trying to echo to the parents.
All righty. Todd, always a pleasure. I wish it weren't on these topics, and we'd wish this would be over. It'll never be over for the families, that's for
right.
Sure. I know you're about to go on Channel 7 and elsewhere. So, as I say, it's a busy day for you, but thanks for your help, Todd.
Paul W., always a pleasure being with you. Thank you.
Todd Flood, attorney, managing partner at Flood Law. We stay on top of the James and Jennifer Crumbly sentencing. When we have an answer, you will have that answer very quickly as we continue in focus on WJR. Well, it was hard to imagine, but it's true. It was this month, 10 years ago, we introduced you, and for that matter ourselves, to a young doctor named Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha. She came on board and was the first to be really sounding the real alarm about the problem with Flint water, the lead, and all of the issues that could lead to in children's health. And it started with Dr. Mona, as we ended up calling her, now Associate Dean for Public Health and C.S. Mott Endowed Professor of Public Health at Michigan State University College of Human Medicine, a pediatrician who helped discover the issue with Flint's drinking water. Since then, there's been an army of people who are involved in this, and something called the Flint Registry. It's a long-term public health project that connects people to services and programs to promote health and wellness and to understand the impact of the Flint water crisis. The community voices expressed through the Flint Registry have led to policy and regulatory changes across Michigan and, for that matter, across the United States, because we soon found there were problems with lead in the pipes and in the water all across this great country of ours, not just in Flint. And Flint is showing the world a model for community-driven public health, and the work is shaping the landscape for future programs, resources, opportunities to ensure a better future for Flint and beyond. And I have two doctors very much a part of that. As we welcome to Focus with Paul W. Smith, Dr. Nicole Jones, epidemiologist, faculty member of the College of Human Medicine's Charles Stewart Mott Department of Public Health, Michigan State University, co-principal investigator for the Flint Registry. Dr. Jones, welcome.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon. Glad to talk to you today.
Well, we're glad to have you with us. And we welcome Dr. Kenyatta Dotson, the Director of Community-Based Implementation and Engagement for Michigan State University College of Human Medicine, Charles Stewart Mott Department of Public Health, co-chair of the Community Advisory Board for the Flint Registry. Dr. Dotson, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having both of us. We're happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here to shed a little light on what is impossible to think, but truly was 10 years ago. How far have we come, Dr. Jones, in making sure something like this can never happen again?
That's a great question. We often say the Flint water crisis was not the first, it was not the worst, and we don't think it will be the last water crisis that we have. But it is because of the advocacy and the action of the citizens of Flint and the community advocates that we've seen changes. So we have seen in the state of Michigan things like a change in the lead and copper rule. We have one of the most proactive lead and copper rules across the United States. We've lowered the action level with regards to lead and water. We've required cities to do inventory of their pipes and to notify residents who have lead service lines. And also to create a plan to replace lead service lines in the next 20 years. So we've really shifted the conversation towards primary prevention, and it is because of those community voices that continued to today to really talk about the importance of water safety and water quality.
I'll never forget when we had Dr. Mona on over now 10 years ago and hearing what she discovered and was telling us. It was mind-blowing. Since then, Dr. Kenyatta Dotson, we have found that this was a problem. And as Dr. Jones just said, before, during, and after, this has been a problem in these United States. And I suspect you, with the Flint Registry, have affected change across the country in this area, Dr. Dotson.
I would definitely say that we have affected change throughout the country. Flint has been a trailblazer and, you know, in this effort in bringing about change, helping others throughout the country, throughout the state, in knowing how to address this issue. When we first got hit with the water crisis, nobody knew what to do, how to address it, what solutions we could come up with, but community had to come together. We all began to work together, the Flint Registry, MSU being a partner in all of that, always working alongside Flint residents, Flint citizens, and allowing them to know how valuable they are to this whole process. So, yes, I definitely think there has been a significant amount of changes, and Flint has been a great partner across the nation.
I must, a duty means I should respond to another story that's going underway because everyone's wondering. We are just told that Jennifer and James Crumbly have been sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. So they're on the edge, I think, Mike Parsons. That would put them right at the maximum that was expected. There were some that thought the judge might even go over the maximum, but they're at the maximum, are they not, 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, 10 to 15, 858 days served. But, yeah, 10 to 15 is the maximum that they could be sentenced.
All right. And so, you know, the screwy thing about the way we do things in Michigan and probably other states is they will be eligible for parole. I thought that Todd Flood said like in 53 months or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But they will be eligible for parole. We'll see how that all works out. But
yeah, Marie will have a lot of, on this at about 1:15.
All right. We'll look forward to the further details. But at this moment, the Crumbly parents sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. Dr. Kenyatta Dotson, Dr. Nicole Jones, a busy day, one we didn't expect to be so busy. Quick question for Dr. Jones. We were all worried about the kids 10 years ago. 10 years later, what has been the results of all the testing of those kids? Are they okay, or are they having troubles? They're going to have the troubles the rest of their lives. And you can bring the music down for a second, Danielle.
Doctor. So as you know, exposure to lead is a lifelong concern, especially for kids, as young kids, as their brains are still developing, and lead is a neurotoxin. So one of our goals is to look at how kids are doing, and we have published some data that shows that we do have concerns about our kids. So we're concerned about their mental health, the way the number of kids that are being diagnosed with things like depression and anxiety. We're also concerned about their behavioral health as far as their communication skills, attention skills. But what we try to do here at the registry is really make sure that those kids get connected to services and programs to mitigate the impact of any exposure that they had. So yes, we're concerned about their health. This is a long-term process. It's a long-term health implication, and our work is long-term.
We will check back with you from time to time, knowing that this exists, the Flint Registry, Dr. Nicole Jones and Dr. Kenyatta Dotson. Thank you both for all the work that you've done and for sharing the information with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You have a good day as well. 1243 WJR. Well, it's another beautiful day, but it is a day we get back to reality. It was great escaping reality and all being involved in the eclipse. But now the other news at hand, very important for sure. And we welcome Emily Kroll, the PAC director, Michigan Right to Life. And it's been a confusing ride for folks, the Michigan Right to Life, in following Donald Trump, who's changed his mind, I guess, a few times and probably much to the chagrin of Michigan Right to Life. But let's find out what Emily is here and wants to bring to our attention. Emily, it's a pleasure having you in focus.
Well, thank you for having me.
Former President Donald Trump now saying individual states should choose their own abortion restrictions. He avoided talk of any kind of federal government ban and drawing criticism from Democrats and anti-abortion Republicans alike on this pivotal election issue. Tell me your thoughts.
Well, to start out with, it's pretty clear that there was never a path forward for a national abortion limit at any point. And the threat was really an election year fantasy that was conjured up in the minds of the Democrat Party in order to scare women to the ballot box. The reality, especially here in Michigan, is abortion is protected in our state constitution. And now it appears in over a dozen places in our state law. So the President Trump's statements from yesterday just reiterate what reality was and what we already knew.
That abortion is already protected and there's not a lot that the Right to Life Michigan or anybody else can do about it. It is a losing political chit, I'm afraid. And I hate to hear that abortion and life and all of that becomes a political chit, but that's what it's become.
It has become a very political issue, but I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a losing political issue. there are many common sense protections that enjoy the support of a majority of Michiganders that are currently in stake at in Michigan. For example, parental consent for a minor girl seeking an abortion, informed consent so that women get basic information about the risks of abortion procedures and basic facts on human development, and protections for taxpayers so that their money isn't siphoned off to pay for other people's abortion procedures. While abortion itself is very much part of the Michigan reality at the moment, there are real tangible issues that are at stake in Michigan. And it's, to be honest, it looks like the reason why the Democrat Party and Governor Whitmer are so fixated on this phantom of a national ban is because they want to distract Michigan voters from the issues that are really at stake.
Well, give us, again, give us those items that are really at stake.
Certainly. Just as an example, just a couple weeks ago on March 26th, Governor Whitmer appeared on the radio program Stateside, where she was very clear in saying that as part of the original Reproductive Health Act package was the repeal of Michigan's parental consent law, and that she wanted to sign that original package. So what she has very clearly stated is that it is the position of her and Michigan's Democratic Party that parents should have no say in the health decisions that their minor daughters make. Informed consent is just the simple giving of information to women before an abortion procedure. And that was also the revoking of informed consent was part of that package. And that position of revoking informed consent is so radical that she couldn't even get a majority support in her own party. Yet they've still promised that since they couldn't do it through the legislature, an abortion clinic, Northland Family Planning, has now gone to the courts saying that informed consent is illegal under Proposal 3. And then also the repealing of taxpayer protections so that Medicaid dollars don't go to pay for abortion procedures was also part of that original package. All of them are something that the governor and the Michigan Democratic Party have now promised to get rid of.
But, of course, we've seen Emily Kroll with us, PAC director, Michigan Right to Life. The Democrats have, I'll say brilliantly because it works for them. I don't think there's anything brilliant about lying and telling half-truths to scare women, in this case, into believing they have to vote for a Democrat to keep their right to their bodies and for their own decisions. And they have pushed all along that now Donald Trump, even though he said what he said, now they're saying, well, this just means that the former president is supporting all of the states that are making abortion illegal, and they don't trust women. And if you vote for them, your rights are going to be gone. And this works in a political campaign, especially with the younger demographics that they so desperately need and want to win. And it creates a problem. So I appreciate you trying to speak up and tell the truth in these areas and understand that if you just said all abortion is wrong and we cannot have it, that the people that support that and are running for office will not get elected. Here we go. Hour two of Focus. Certainly really wonderful being with you Monday through Friday. It was a great day yesterday. Our minds were off of all the news. We didn't talk about anything else other than, well, we talked about a few things, but we were focused on something we were all focused on, which was the eclipse. And what it might be for some, a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And people were moved by it. They were touched by it. And that was good. I also think that we all needed something else to focus on rather than all of the news that we've been focused on for a while. And we've been focused on a lot of terrible news for a while. But we've got the team here. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, pressing all the right buttons, controls, etc. Rich Luzinski, WJR Traffic and Weather First.
And if you're not streaming us, give it a try. It's well worth it. It's easy, too, at WJR.com. Stream us. Get the WJR app as well. That's easy. And you can get our podcasts there, and I hope you will. I hope you will check out our podcasts for interviews that you heard and want to hear again, or for the whole show because you weren't available from noon to 2. And I understand that, too, but I would love it if you would be sure to tune in on the podcast, again, at WJR.com. Was this a moving experience for you, Danielle? Is this something that I heard some people saying on television, this, they will remember this for the rest of their lives, the whole eclipse thing?
I'll remember it because I remember the last one, but I thought it was very cool. I talked to some people who are down in Nashville, and they had, like, terrible skies, and it was cloudy and all that, so they weren't jazzed about it, and I was like, no, it was so cool, guys, and they were just like, eh. I was like, no, it was really cool.
I'll always remember Danielle running up and down the hallway screaming yesterday about the eclipse.
That is true. I was doing that.
Were you seriously?
Oh, I was. I was wearing these clonking boots, too. So it was loud. I was running back and forth, making sure no one was stealing my glasses. It was kind of a mess over here, actually.
Really? Was there a fight for glasses?
Well, they just all wanted to use mine, and I didn't want them to get their fingerprints on the
I don't
legs.
Blame you.
See? So I was very protective over those glasses.
Well, if it weren't for Kim, I wouldn't have had the glasses. So I was lucky because they arrived yesterday morning. Ooh. That was close.
I didn't have any until about 12:30 when Laura came over and gave me some.
Oh, that was nice of Laura.
Well, it was her dad's idea. So I guess, thank you, Mr. Hessen.
Yes, indeed. Our moms and dads do come up with good ideas. We have to accept that and understand that. And obviously she did. All right. Unfortunately, the whole Jennifer and James Crumbly thing, at least at this point, now they'll appeal and all the rest of it. But the father of Ethan Crumbly, I, for the longest time, never said his name, but it's unavoidable now. They have been sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison, credit for time served. Marie Osborne has a few things to talk about. That, the very latest, and also what to know about President Biden's latest try to get as many students to vote for him as possible. Oh, I mean, the new student debt relief plan. No, I'm not going to act like that's not what it is. Of course that's what it is. It's to try to get him as many votes from young people as he possibly can. So that's that. There are some other important things out there that no one is talking about. The former defense secretary, Mark Esper, predicts that Iran will strike at Israel. I mean, like, we need more trouble in that part of the world, and we find ourselves in the middle of it all the time.
And it feels like we're always just sitting and waiting for a retaliatory strike.
Right. And then we have to do something. And this president has no idea what to do and dances as much as he can, but whatever. I thought we'd talk to Luna Pier Mayor Jim Gardner today, but I forgot to mention that to you, Mike Parsons, to try to get him. And, you know, tomorrow's too late, I think. And we're busy tomorrow. We're on location tomorrow.
Yeah, you're in Kalamazoo.
We're in Kalamazoo for the governor's, how do we call it? The governor's convention. Is convention the right word I want for it? It's on tourism.
Yes.
But I forget what there's a better name for it. Let me just look real quick.
I know, I'm Googling it tour. The Pure Michigan Governor's Conference on Tourism.
There we go. I knew somebody would have the actual name.
We had all the words correct, just not in the right order.
Yeah, well, it gets complicated. So we've got that on tomorrow, the 10th. And then on the 11th, I'm thrilled to say Lomas Brown is going to join me in Focus. And we'll be at the Economic Club lunch at the Motor City Casino in the Soundboard. And Rod Wood and all of the Detroit Lions football team will be in our vision, I guess. That's what we'll be talking. It's Detroit Lions Day is the best way to put it for the Detroit Economic Club. And Lomas Brown will be there with us, which is
what?
Perfect.
You'll be well protected.
You're going to have fun with Lomas.
I always have fun with Lomas, the legend.
Don't
Lomas
we
is,
all?
Lomas is the legend. Now, he calls me the legend, but he's really the legend. We had Neil Rubin on last week, from the Detroit Free Press. He's honorary chairperson of Bookstock, and Bookstock opened and opened well and is underway. Metro Detroit's biggest and best used book and media sale, celebrating 20 years of supporting the need to read. He was with us 20 years ago. And we were there right from the beginning with Rochelle Riley and of course, Neil Rubin. But it's going on, and it's on through the 14th of April, so you still have plenty of time, offering spectacular deals on used books and media. And Bookstock has distributed over $3 million to literacy and education projects throughout the city of Detroit, Oakland, Wayne counties, and beyond.
And those Bookstockers do not play, Paul. My wife has been a few times, and she bought the early access tickets for $25. As soon as that door opens, people are sprinting in, trying to get their hands on a deal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We get those rolly bags, too, because you can't carry all those books in your hands. You got to get that bag on wheels and stick them in there.
Well, they make so many great deals, too. Even the kids, school kids, can come in and get great deals, if not free, books. It is an incredible way to start a library. And if you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and you help them understand how important reading is, and you help them understand how important it is to start building a library, we are helping kids in a very big way to have a better life.
And it's a godsend for teachers, too, who, you know, they have limited resources and they might not get the funding they need to really stock their library. They go over there, there's a whole kids section, and they're able to, you know, get a ton of books for their classrooms as well. So it's very important.
And they should get over there to Laurel Park Place. And I had all my notes here.
Yeah, Laurel Park Place in Livonia.
Yeah, in Livonia. Laurel Park Place, Livonia. And it's underway. And if you need to go online to find out what the times are, you can do that. It's Bookstock. And it's a big deal. And it supports everybody and the need to read. And that's going on until April 14th. It is a wonderful, wonderful event. These people have been doing this for 20 years and helping kids. And you can help, too. Be a part of it. All right. Maria's coming up. And she's going to talk to us about the Crumblies. I think we've added that to her duties. Have we not, Mike? Oh, she is? We're going to skip over Biden's student debt relief
plan? Yeah, Crumblies is a huge story right now. She's got a ton of great audio and insight. So we're just going to go all Crumblies with her.
We'll go all Crumblies all the time. All right, we'll do that as we continue In Focus with Paul W. Smith and the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski here on WJR. Well, for the first time in our history in the United States, the parents of a school shooter are being held directly responsible for the actions of their child. And as you know now, and you heard it here live, this afternoon, Jennifer and James Crumbley, the parents of the Oxford school shooter, learned their fate. WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne digs deep and has more on the sentence and what took place in court. Good afternoon, Marie.
And good afternoon, Paul. A lot happened in court today. Let's start with the sentence. 10 to 15 years each for James and Jennifer Crumbley. This exceeds the sentencing guidelines given by the state. They had suggested 7 years. The pair will also get credit for time served. That's about 858 days. That's over 2 years. There were 6 victim impact statements. And the one that stood out for me was from Rihanna St. Juliana. Her 14-year-old sister was killed by the Oxford High School shooter. She told the Crumleys, "My sister was killed by the bullets you bought your son. My sister will not have any tomorrows." Bachmeier, father of Tate Mear, calling for a full truth and accountability in this case, saying that the family still don't have the full story of what happened. Both James and Jennifer Crumbley spoke to the court. Here's what Jennifer Crumbley had to say in part.
"If I even thought my son was capable of crimes like these, things would have absolutely been different."
And James Crumbley, we did not hear him speak in court, of course, because he did not testify in his own behalf. He had this to say.
"Part of you will be missing forever. But please know that I am truly very sorry. I am sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did."
Now, James Crumley specifically saying he was sorry to the victims' families and saying directly to Buck Meir that he also wants a full account of what happened on the day of the shooting. The full truth, he said. Prosecutors argued that Ethan's parents were criminally negligent by providing him the gun and then ignoring the warning signs about his mental health. Karen McDonald also addressed the court, saying that this was foreseeable. That's what this case was about. The judge saying that she prayed about this case, that she said the case was about repeated lack of action. And one last note, Paul, there was something interesting that happened during when they went over the sentencing guidelines. It indicated that the Crumleys, all three of them, will not be allowed contact with one another from behind bars. The defense taking exception to that, the judge saying she's not sure she has legal standing to change that. But later this month, after getting briefs from both the defense and the prosecution and the Michigan Department of Corrections, because this is their rule, she'll decide if she can rule on this part of the sentencing recommendation. In other words, she also indicated that this is really the first time they've been presented with something like this, where the parents and the child were all in the prison system. Yeah. And one other thing, too, we are looking at appeals in this case. We are getting indications that there will be appeals.
I would assume. I mean, it's almost a given. There's always an appeal. And I'm just wondering, and I didn't get a chance to ask Todd Flood earlier, what he has seen that might lead to a successful appeal. I never heard anyone call out any glaring errors or anything like that that would lead someone to say, yeah, there's going to be an appeal and they could be successful. I just haven't heard anything.
Do you remember the issue with the prosecutor not disclosing to the defense that the two people who testified from the school district were allegedly given, were told, well, you won't be prosecuted if you testify. We're trying to get for about what you have to say. In other words, we want to know what happened that day. We want to hear your testimony. And there was this sort of indication that they had been given, well, you won't be prosecuted for this. That's the allegation now. So there might be a problem there, because the defense, you know, you have to present all exculpatory evidence ahead of a trial, all of it. And this might fall under that category. Of course, Todd, you know, he's the absolute expert on this and would be better able to answer that question. But that's one area that sticks in my head that might be at issue here.
Which has caused a great deal of mental anguish and pain if, in fact, people in the school have been given a free pass because they testified or because they allowed themselves to be interviewed by the prosecutor to get information, but being told before anybody knew anything, really, oh, by the way, you won't be prosecuted for this. That's a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah, that's the allegation. We don't, you know, I want to make sure that it's clear that, you know.
So it's just an allegation.
That's not been completely fleshed out in terms of who said what when. But that is definitely something that, made some big headlines. And of deep concern, obviously.
Sure.
And then, of course, you have the families who've had to go through the shooter's trial, when he admitted his guilt and his sentencing and his statement, then they were there for that. And then they have to give victim impact statements for that. And now today, it's been a very rough road for these families.
It's been a very rough road for Tate Meyer's parents, Hannah St. Juliana, Madison Baldwin, Justin Schilling. And it's not over. That's the
trouble. It'll never be over.
They'll never not have the pain they have, but they want to get as much closure, or at least close to closure, in terms of what happened and why, and what needs to be changed and could be done to make sure no other parents ever go through this. Mm-hmm. And that's where there's going to be a lot to discuss. There's no quick, easy answer, but they want the truth. They want to know everything, and no one can blame them for that. And you just cry for these folks, and you can't imagine what they are going through still and what they've gone through. It's just horrific.
It absolutely has. And every time they've been very eloquent and, frankly, very generous with their time speaking, of course, to law enforcement and to the prosecutors and all that, but also for the media, that they have, you know, made themselves available to speak to the media, to talk about, you know, what they are asking for in this case. And this call on their part to have a full accountability fully of what happened that day is extremely important. I don't think we've heard the end of that.
No, and it's not an unreasonable request.
No.
In by any measure, it's not an unreasonable request.
No, and I think they owe that to the community, too, not just primarily to these victims, but what about the community at large? They should know these are their tax dollars that are going to these policies.
And what has been learned since this, and what changes have been made in all schools to kind of try to do whatever they can, it's not always preventable, but to at least know that you've got some things in place that can help prevent this happening again. And we want to make sure that happens as well, Marie.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thanks for the help on this. What a day. We had a great day yesterday. The whole world was, not the whole world, but our world, was paying attention to the eclipse. And I think we got so much attention because it was something we could all participate in that was positive, that took our minds off all of the negative news that we're surrounded by all the time. Well, we're back, unfortunately, to the negative news. And, we'll just have to deal with it. But it was a breath of fresh air.
During that whole event, not one single person said, who are you voting for president, right?
Yeah, right. that's the point.
Not a single person.
Not an argument at all. Okay. Thank you, Marie. Appreciate
it.
Marie Osborne, WJR Senior News Analyst. Coming up, Rocky Rutschkowski. He's always interesting, and he'll have lots to talk about. Up next here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Pleasure to welcome in our guest expert, who always is very helpful. I wish we didn't have so much to talk about, but we do. Rocky Rutschkowski, retired Lieutenant Colonel for the United States Army here. Well, to talk about too many things, Rocky, it's a good afternoon. Always a pleasure having you here.
Same here as well, Paul W.
I'm going to throw a curveball just because of what's been going on. And Friday, there was a protest in Dearborn with... Here in Dearborn, Michigan, these United States of America, protesters chanting, death to America, and of course, death to Israel. But here we are, in these United States, hearing our own citizens chanting, death to America. One of the activists saying it's not Genocide Joe that has to go, but it's the entire system of the United States that has to go. He quoted Malcolm X saying, quote, we live in one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth, end of quote. It is hard to imagine that this is what's going on in our country today.
You're absolutely correct, and it is visceral to me to hear that, especially coming from our own state. But I will tell you, Paul W., that a lot of the people that are in Dearborn and around our state are not all citizens. Some are green card holders, and some freely go back and forth between the Middle East. And that is why, you know, especially we took it viscerally when we saw the Wall Street Journal call Dearborn the jihad capital of the United States. We fought and supported our brothers and sisters that live in Dearborn, but they are not helping the situation. And I take it as someone that has served in the military and someone that loves my country and someone that my parents came here legally. They made everything possible for me to believe that this country is the best in the world. And it truly is. And we don't need to continue to even give any of those individuals time on your air to discuss their vile comments.
All right. Yeah, I'll take that as a time to move on to the other things that we wanted to talk about. It's just sickening. Overwhelmingly sickening. The U.S. delivers a new proposal for Israel-Hamas hostages, ceasefire deal. Democrats calling for President Biden to halt arms transfer with Israel. Give me your thoughts on all of this.
Well, number one, let's first talk about the CIA director. This is the first time ever where a CIA CIA director, not Department of State or an envoy, has been used in this type of capacity. And it's CIA director Bill Burns, who was appointed by the Biden administration. And he is, quite frankly, not your typical CIA director. He was originally went up the chain of command and raised basically to his status in the Department of State. So this is definitely a part where the Department of State is starting to control the CIA a lot more than ever before. That's something we should truly, as Americans, that's something politically that we should be very concerned about, because there was always a difference between our intelligence gathering individuals and our Department of State, because the Department of State tend to be do-gooders, folks that are focused on extending a hand and goodwill. But our CIA has always been the spooks and the men and women on the ground, the operations folks, as well as your analysts, and we're starting to see a politicization of the CIA. This is one way where you've seen that by the appointment of Bill Burns by Biden, and he is now the envoy for this ceasefire agreement. And quite frankly, it's a ceasefire agreement that Netanyahu is having, and most of the Israelis are having a hard time swallowing, because it basically says that 900 Palestinian prisoners would be freed, and that's what the U.S. is pushing for, as opposed to a lower number that Israel wanted, for just 40 hostages. Just 40 hostages. And now the hostage number, you know, originally was about 158, 108, and then it's been dropping down, because as Israel further moves around that Khan Yunis area and then down into the southern Gaza, we're starting to find more and more of these hostages were actually killed or are dead and are no longer being held as hostages.
I hate to go further into this, but now we have the former Defense Secretary Mark Esper this past week saying that Iran is likely to retaliate against Israel.
Absolutely.
For that strike that killed one of their senior commanders there in the Revolutionary Guard Corps. I mean, it just seems to get worse and worse. I don't see light at the end of the tunnel other than a speeding train coming right at us.
Well, here's our problem, Paul W., and that is that we're not dealing with the actual problem. This is like a doctor trying to cure cancer with an aspirin. We are continuously having these attacks with Hezbollah, the Houthis out of Yemen, Hezbollah out of southern Lebanon, Hamas out of the Palestinian area and Gaza and even on the West Bank. But we're not dealing with the individual, the threat here. And the threat comes out of Tehran. This administration, and I try not to be too political on these issues, but this administration has become very weak and has basically strengthened Tehran and the Iranian regime to continuously arm these basically what you would call satellite groups, Hezbollah, Houthis, or Hamas. And what we really need to do is deal with Iran and the threat that Iran has in that region. Because when you look at this, Israel has relationships with Egypt, with Saudi Arabia now, with Oman. We need to basically make sure that Iran is no longer an impediment to this.
Rocky, quick note, quick answer here. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the U.S. and China relationship is on stable footing. Your reaction quickly.
No, it's not.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Rocky Rejkowski, retired lieutenant colonel for the U.S. Army. He tells it like he sees it, and I like the way he sees it, as we continue in Focus on WJR. The news never stops. More than 50 people arrested today after the Senate cafeteria was shut down by anti-Israel protesters chanting, "The Senate can't eat until Gaza eats." Closer to home, an evacuation at Eastern Michigan University. Marie Osborne brings us the very latest on this breaking story. Marie?
Yeah. Hi, Paul. So we're just piecing together some early information here from Ypsilanti that there was an emergency alert issued by Eastern Michigan University. It was about an hour ago that I first talked with Mike Parsons about this. It was issued and listed as critical and said it was an emergency was reported at in Wise, Buell, and Putman buildings, and also an emergency at Walton Phelps and Best Downing, also Downing and Eateries and DC One. Those are buildings on EMU's campus. They're asking people to evacuate the buildings immediately using the nearest exits and hallways. The university was saying that this, all these alerts were triggered definitely by a bomb threat, and that certain residence halls were also being evacuated as police investigate. Paul, we say it all the time. This is a dynamic situation. Things are happening very rapidly, and that's what we know right now.
Okay, and no one's claiming responsibility. Oh, yeah, we don't have any details yet.
No, but again, the Washtenaw County Sheriff's Office is also confirming that the threats were made for EMU. Also at the Marriott and Eagle Crest in Ypsilanti. So the authorities are also searching those buildings as well.
Had we heard of any specific problems on the campus of EMU lately?
Not recently that I'm aware of, no. Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, if anything comes up in these next few minutes, please break in our conversation coming up here with Chris. And I'm sure Chris will have you on as well as more information becomes available. An evacuation of several buildings on the campus of Eastern Michigan University, even off the campus, and you came right out and said it, a bomb threat. All right. Thank you, Marie. Well, like I said earlier, Chris Renwick, yesterday was a breath of fresh air because it had nothing to do with politics or any of the politicians or any of the wars or anything else. It all had to do with Mother Nature throwing us a wonderful coincidence, really, of a astronomical bit of news that took our minds off everything else. And man, did we slam back into reality too quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that how it goes? It was a great day. I mean, you know, it was funny. So yesterday during the show, because the 98% of the visibility of the sun outside between the moon and Earth was at 3:13. So we, Ray Templin, our engineer, had a wireless mic. We went outside, and as we walked outside, there was not a lot of talking going on amongst everybody there at Cranbrook. But everybody in unison with their glasses on looking up towards the sky. It was marvelous. It's mystical. It's been happening for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And it's special to take in when you have an opportunity.
I would say everybody was involved one way or another. Even people who wanted to pretend they had no interest whatsoever. They were dragged into it because it was everywhere. It was everywhere.
It was all encompassing.
It was all-encompassing, and it was fine. It was a good thing, and people enjoyed it. People think, they've said, I'm going to remember this the rest of my life. You don't get to say that about good, positive things very often, and they were able to do that. And what a thrill that you were able to bring us your live coverage from Cranbrook. That was a big deal, and we appreciate you doing that. It's not easy to talk about an eclipse while it's underway on the radio. But you did it, and you did it well.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun. It's a good spot to be in, and everybody there, except for one little girl who told me it was boring. Everybody else said it was boring.
I heard you say that in a promo. I thought, what? It's boring. Oh, my, that's funny. Well,
that's all right. It's how she felt. That's great.
I enjoyed very much today's, I just happen to have this one always, the Detroit News, where in the banner on top, it's got a crescent, almost like it's the sliver that happened that we all could see around here with the eclipse in there, the Detroit News. The O is that sliver.
Oh, that's
well done.
Cool.
Very cool. And then they have a progression of the total solar eclipse as seen from Luna Pier, where we weren't supposed to go. Mm-hmm. And it shows a beautiful pictures. And inside, two pages of eclipse photos. And I kept trying to say that yesterday. Don't try to take a picture of it. Enjoy it. Be in the moment and enjoy it. There'll be plenty of pictures around that, frankly, will be better than the pictures you can get on your phone or even your camera, unless you're set up like a professional photographer to have all that stuff.
Yeah, I only saw a couple of people holding their glasses up to their phone while they tried to take a picture.
Yeah.
Otherwise, everybody was. It was. Everybody was in the moment, taking it in. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Well, it was fun, and it was fun while it lasted. And I wish we could have, an eclipse every week to take our minds off the dark clouds of the world that are underway. What are you doing today?
Well, we got a lot to do. Obviously, the big news over the last couple hours here, the parents of the Oxford High School shooter have been sentenced. Yeah. We'll get the latest on that. We'll obviously continue to follow this story out of Eastern Michigan University, hoping everybody's okay, everybody's safe, but they are doing their due diligence to check out these threats in multiple places, which, you know, in this day and age, you don't take lightly. It's why authorities tell you to, if you see something, you say something, even if it isn't anything.
And do something.
Yeah.
Call the authorities.
Yeah, you got to do it. And so they're doing that. So we'll track that as well. And lots of other stuff to do today.
Well, we're going to take people's mind off that best we can on our show tomorrow, as we will be broadcasting live from Kalamazoo and the Governor's Conference on Tourism. And our show is extended. They've thrown an extra hour in there, so we'll be live from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and tourism is a bright spot, and an important bright spot for the state of Michigan, even though it seems as if pure Michigan has been downgraded a little bit.
Slashed with some
of the money that was used and is missing. We still understand how important tourism is to all of us, and so we're looking forward to that. And I just heard a Treetops commercial, and I'm happy to say I'm having dinner tonight with Barry Owens, Mr. Treetops, and Susan Wilcox Olson and Ava and our team from the radio station that will be there.
Good people.
Tomorrow. All good people.
Yeah, good people.
Well, we're looking forward to listening to your show. It's, you know, when you come down from being out at Cranbrook, you got to get yourself geared up again.
We really need a telescope here. I've become accustomed to that.
I think it would be a great idea. We'll put that in the budget for next year.
Thank you. Very good.
And you see how corporate would react to that? And Chris Runwick is requesting a telescope in the studio. What do you think? Hello? Hello? What do you think? Hello? All righty. Thank you, Chris. We'll be listening.
See you, Paulie.
JR Afternoon, Chris Renwick, as you are on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift. Join us tomorrow live from Kalamazoo, special hours 11 to 2. And it will be the very important Governor's Conference on Tourism. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon, actually tomorrow morning starting at 11. Go on out, make it a great one. Regards, Paul W. Smith.